Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned for me, but had no opportunity to show it. Not that I am referring to being in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed and of going hungry, of having plenty and of being in need. I can do all things through God who strengthens me. In any case, it was kind of you to share my distress. You Philippians indeed know that in the early days of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving except you alone. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs more than once. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the profit that accumulates to your account. I have been paid in full and have more than enough. I am fully satisfied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And my God will fully satisfy every need of yours according to God's riches and glory in Christ Jesus. To our God and Creator be glory forever and ever. Amen.
You gave your life to make a difference. You gave your life to make a change. You welcomed all to your table. You're calling us to do the same. You gave your life to make a difference. You gave your life to make a change. You welcomed all to your table.
In 2010, Pastor Linda and I went to Fort Worth with a group of pastors, really from around the country, who were learning how to start new churches. And as we did this, about the second or third day, the facilitator of this week-long course on helping us learn how to live out this life of being a church planter had us take out a piece of paper and gave us 5 minutes to write down all of the names of the people that we can think of who have loved us and supported us during our life journeys. And so we were pretty good at that part. We were just writing, thinking back over our early lives, our childhood, all the people so far away who have supported us and loved us. And then he had us turn the page over and said, now you have 5 minutes to, you have three sentences. You need to say thank you. You need to tell them about your new church. And then you need to ask them for money. And we're like, uh-oh. See, we had never done anything like this. We're United Methodist pastors. And in our churches, the way we've done this always is that the people who come in support the ministries that God has in mind for that place. We've never written letters to family and friends who live a long ways away and said, will you support us in our ministries? And so I at least got really scared. But underneath, I think I was thinking, we're not going to really do this. That's fine. And if you've seen either of us try to put anything into three sentences, you know that in and of itself is not actually possible. So we kept at it for a couple of weeks. We kept sharing drafts with each other, and eventually we had something that seemed short enough. It wasn't three sentences, but it was on one page, and it was pretty short. And our hearts skipped a beat, and we put some stamps on letters, and we sent them off. I think, looking back on it, it was one of the first times in my life where I've believed in something so much. I've been so passionate about something that I really wanted to invite other folks who've loved me to be in it together with me. There was something that I believed so deeply about what this might be that we sent those off, as scary as it was, to actually put the envelope in. Those letters, along with, we came back to that every year. I know some of you in this room are listening on the podcast. It generated over $40,000 for the table as we got started, just those simple letters that we sent off. It's an amazing experience of abundance to know these people that you love so much, that have watched over you in love, are wanting to support you in this vision or this passion that you have for how God is calling you to be. Most conversations with pastors, this is true, I think, in the nonprofit world in general, but most conversations with pastors don't start from a place of abundance. They start from a place of scarcity. So there's a pastor in Miami, and he's the pastor at Mount Tabor Missionary Baptist Church. His name is George McCray. He was in one of those conversations with other pastors, and it went as most of those conversations do. Well, our people are a year older this year than they were last year. Our people were pretty old last year. Fewer people this year. Do you know that in the United States, only the average amount a person gives away of their income is 1.9%? It's just not enough anymore with fewer people coming in. What's worse than that, as our congregations keep getting older, do you know that over time, less than 5% of people in the world include in their wills communities of faith? In the United States, that's that statistic. Less than 5%. So these churches, like, we can all see the writing on the wall. So scarce. We don't have enough. There aren't enough people here. They're not giving enough. Pastor McCray stands up. He says, you guys need to get yourselves some addicts and some prostitutes. Okay, this is not what people were expecting. Because they were used to how the script was going. Like, there's not enough. This is bad. It's getting worse. It's going to be even worse tomorrow. Addicts and prostitutes? Everyone was totally quiet. But then he got serious. And he started to tell a story about his own church in Miami, how they were reaching out to folks on the streets. And what he had found as he had done that is that people over and over who'd had their lives transformed by the love that his church had shown were grateful in ways that few of us can fathom. One of those people came to him and said, I want to understand what I can say. How do I say thank you back to Jesus? This community has lived out the love of God in a way that changed my life. I want to say thank you back. How do I do that? So he started to talk about tithing, about giving 10%. And when pastors start to talk about tithing, they start to get anxious because you heard it, 1.9% is a lot lower than 10%. So like, we're going to make somebody feel bad. What's going to happen? And this person just cut them off and said, that's it? 10%? That's all Jesus even wants? See, the guy that I was working for, he needed 90%. 10% for her seemed like nothing, really. That's coming from a place of abundance. It's having your life turned around so that when you see how God is moving in your life, you feel a deep sense of gratitude, and there's nothing you can do but want to share that with others. That was her story. There's one pastor who writes about it this way: to create and cultivate a culture of gratitude in your church, which is clearly where that person lived, the first task is to help people realize the many blessings that they've received from God. So instead of distributing spreadsheets and budgets and line items, invite people to reflect on where they've experienced God's love in their life. What are the gifts that they're grateful for? Where do they feel blessed? See, Pastor McCray's church, it has a log jam at the offering plates because the people in that community feel genuinely blessed. Their lives have been turned around by a God who loves them in a community that walks alongside them. I believe that Paul, who Linda read from this morning, he would have felt really at home at that little church in Miami. He knew what it was like to be on an edge, to have his life turned around by God, and then to experience a place of blessedness and gratitude. His own life had been turned completely around by Jesus. He was on fire and passionate for what this was going to be like. So he writes this letter to the church in Philippi. He's wanting to share with them thanksgiving for all of the ways that they've been in the gospel with him. The ways that they've been in this together, accompanying one another. Linda read earlier from the New Revised Standard Version, but I want to share a different one this morning. It's Eugene Peterson, who's a Presbyterian pastor. So we're going to go, kind of use his words to help us think a little bit about this letter. His translation of chapter 4 in Philippians starts like this. I'm glad in God, far happier than you would ever guess. Happy that you're again showing such strong concern for me. Not that you ever quit praying and thinking about me. You just had no chance to show it. So while it's hard for me to imagine the reality of life that brought that young woman into Pastor McCrae's church, it's equally hard for me to imagine the reality of the jail from which Paul was writing. He was imprisoned for his faith. He had gotten in a lot of trouble. And clearly, so too had the people that he was writing to. See, the people there were trying to subvert empire so much, and they'd been so busy trying to do this, they didn't have time to stop and write to Paul or to send someone over to say thank you. Like a lot of us, sometimes we could have felt like Paul and wanted to shame them. Haven't you been thinking about me? I'm the one locked up. But he doesn't do that. He recognizes they're caught up in the gospel too. They're caught up in the good news, and it's keeping them busy. And he is just glad that they're reaching out to him right now. He continues, actually, I don't have a sense of needing anything personally. I've learned by now to be quite content, whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much as with little. I found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. That's what abundance looks like. That's what it feels like. See, Paul's writing from prison. He's known moments in his life where he has felt fullness, and he is grateful for that. He finds himself in a moment where he feels and experiences emptiness. And somehow the recipe that he finds for joy in the midst of that is that God is in this with him. Not afraid of any place that he's going or that he's been, but with him in that moment. That's abundance. So here's how Paul thanks the people from Philippi for being in it with him. I don't mean that your help didn't mean a lot to me. It did. It was a beautiful thing that you came alongside me in my troubles. Seriously? Like that's his thank you. I don't mean that it didn't mean a lot. It did. Like if you're in the nonprofit fundraising world, this is where you talk to Paul, like, Paul, come on, like a little more gratitude goes a long ways, Paul. Like you could, I don't know, Linda is definitely not his editor. This is where she throws both hands up in the air and lets folks know, thank you for being in this with me. But Paul's like, I don't mean your role didn't help me. It did a little bit. It was beautiful. See, scholars can't understand what's actually going on with Paul in this. Like, why is he holding back so much? If he really has gratitude for these folks being in it with him, why doesn't he let it go? Like, why doesn't he lift his hands up and give thanks? But he doesn't. Some people say it's because the prison is so austere. He couldn't possibly write any other way than this. Others say it's more like a receipt. He's saying, like, here's what you gave me. Just want to make sure you have a record for this. Kind of like an end of the year giving statement. Want to make sure you got this. Check, we're done with this. Other folks think that stoicism is so deep in Paul's bones that he can't break free. And I suspect the truth is somewhere in the midst of all of that. That this, what you see right there, that's Paul's version of gushing. That's his version of like, this is amazing. This is about as close as he gets to a thank you. He says, you Philippians well know, and you can be sure I'll never forget it, that when I first left Macedonia province, venturing out with the message, not one church helped me out in the give and take of this work except you. You were the only one. Even while I was in Thessalonica, you helped out. And not only once, but twice. See, the church in Philippi, it was the only group of people that had Paul's back. And for that, he was thankful. Now, I'm not looking for handouts, he continues, but I do want you to experience the blessing that issues from generosity. And now I have it all and keep getting more. The gifts you sent with Epaphroditus were more than enough. Like a sweet-smelling sacrifice roasting on the altar, filling the air with fragrance, pleasing God to no end. You can be sure that God will take care of everything you need. God's generosity exceeding even yours in the glory that pours from Jesus. Our God and Creator abounds in glory that just pours out into eternity. Amen or yes. That's Paul's passion. God's redeeming love made known in Jesus. God's hope for the world. That is where Paul finds life, where he finds passion in his own living and moving. See, he trusts that God's generosity pours out in more profound ways than we can possibly fathom. It's that kind of generosity, that kind of passion, that kind of feeling that created that logjam at that little church in Miami. That gratitude was deep. Frederick Buechner writes about it in this way. The place God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. See, Paul had found that place where his deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. For him, it was starting churches, introducing people to the radical, life-changing love of God, and then saying, let's do this. Let's share this message with others. Let's subvert this empire and turn this upside down. And he writes to Philippians to give thanks that they are in it with him, sharing that good news. But that's a long time ago. Like, what would it look like to find today your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger actually meeting? What would that look like? I want to watch with you all. One person is sharing her story of what it feels like and looks like. Let's watch.
How old are you?
97. I'll be 98 in October. I live in a retirement community. And we used to have a bus here to take people to the grocery store twice a week. And they gave that bus up, I don't know why. So a lot of people were stuck around here. Like my neighbor Joyce, who was a very shy person. She said to me, well, if they don't get another bus, they'll find another place for me to live. And she says, I just don't want to go anywhere else. I said, Joyce, I'll get you to the grocery store every week. But I lost my driver's license because somebody thought I was too old. But I didn't have a mark against me at all. I was heartbroken at that. I really was. It made me feel old. It made me feel useless. I'm a good driver. I really am. I'm not fearful when I drive, but I'm very careful.
You're a hot rodder?
No.
Drag race a lot?
Well, I drive 65, but I obey the rules, so I went to get it back. You make a promise. It's important for me to keep that promise if it's possible. And I passed it. I'm on the earth. I'm here. If I can contribute, I should. Shouldn't we all? And not just think of ourselves.
It's supposed to get real cold.
Like I say, I don't have money to give, but I can give myself and my time. lot of people in the world who don't have anybody who cares about them. So that's the way I felt. We're asked to love our neighbor, be a friend. That will give you joy. I mean, I don't do this, so you think I'm great. I don't even think of that. My daughter says, Mother, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. And I'll say, well, okay. And like I say, I do what I please. I wouldn't do anything dangerous, but, you know. How about a cup of tea? Would you like a cup of tea and a muffin?
Oh, I'm good. No, I'm good. Thank you.
People like her friend Joyce were stuck. And so oftentimes we think that our calling is this huge thing. It takes us like Mother Teresa, like to Calcutta. And sometimes it does. But sometimes our calling is a huge thing to look around at the people who are around us, who are stuck. To see that we're in it together with them, like Evelyn, to make a promise and then to live that out. I'm here on earth, she said. I should do what I can. Shouldn't we all? She says she'll do what she pleases. But to me, she's a witness of doing what God pleases. That's the life that she's living out. She's finding a deep hunger in the lives of the people right around her, and she's finding joy. That's her calling. That's her vocation. It's what she's found, and I believe it's what's pleasing to God. Last summer, Pastor Linda and I went together down to Southern California to take a class with something called the Lake Institute. We thought that we were going there to learn best practices in talking to folks about generosity and giving. We thought that we might learn some ways to break through. It's taboo to talk about money. I'm looking at a CPA as I do that. It's kind of ironic. But it's taboo to talk about money, especially in churches. And so we thought, these folks surely can help us. They study this for a living. They've got to have some better ideas than we do. We don't really know how to talk about it. We did write that letter once, but they'll give us some ideas. And the truth was, we didn't walk away with any particular strategies or ideas. But what we did do is get called back. We got called back to a God of generosity who loves us. And we got challenged to live with folks like you all in that reality. And to wonder, what does it look like then to reflect that generous love that God has for us? See, we went down there rooted in abundance. See, 4 years ago, there were a handful of people in this church who were keeping the lights on and the heat on, giving $58,000 a year. That's grown. Over 100 deep commitments came in this year. Five times that amount of money. The generosity of people generations ago purchased a house that this church owned in River Park. And while it sat there, and it too needed some love and some help, so did this campus. And so last year we made a decision, a pretty radical one, to sell that house and to invest that into keeping this space as beautiful as we can, so that generations that we'll never meet will come into here and they can know that we were generous to them in caring for this space and making sure that it's alive, so that God's love, this church, this little church that puts a flag out there that says all means all, is going to make sure that people generations from now put out whatever flag they need to put out so that they can announce God's love in their day. We want to be that kind of people, and that's the kind of passion I feel here. So, see, Paul was writing about it to the church in Philippi, just giving thanks for being in what was he was passionate about, the gospel. That's what it looked like for him. When we got down to the Lake Institute, most of the pastors that we were around, they were like the ones Pastor McCray was experiencing. They're like, well, you're older than last year, fewer of them, less money, what are we going to do? That was the narrative everywhere around us, overwhelmed by scarcity. See, we feel blessed to be part of a story of abundance with you all in this very moment. A That's why we made that transition. It's why you have the space. Some of you could actually like lie down on the pews. Like there's enough space this moment because we made a decision to make room at the table because we believe God's bold vision for this place needs for people in this area to know that God's love is real and for them, even you, even me. That's a tough thing, but I believe that is what's happening in this space. And the reason it's tough is because a lot of us aren't able to really feel or receive the love of God. And that's the story we've been living out. It wasn't just putting that flag up there. It was welcoming people in and then reminding each other every week of God's unconditional love for you and for me and for the entirety of all creation. That's where grace starts. And then grace adopts us into a family. And families come with accountability and responsibility. So folks woke up before I did this morning to come in and turn the coffee on to make sure that when we arrived, there was a place of hospitality and welcome and grace as we came in. Folks left with our children to watch over them in love. Folks are going to stay afterwards to clean this space up. This is our small way, some of us, of finding, just like Evelyn did, the people around us who are stuck and driving them to the grocery store. Some of you are finding that right here in this very community. I know that I am. I feel like Paul sometimes. I imagine the church down in Miami wouldn't have had as much trouble as I was with keeping on beat with Make a Difference. They would have been a little more free to express the deep emotions within inside themselves. But this is what it looks like for me sometimes. This is what it looks like to say, I feel completely overwhelmed and amazed by how phenomenal this whole community is and the way that it's turned my life upside down. This is my version of throwing hands up. It's all I got. I don't know what it looks like for you. Maybe yours is something like Evelyn's. It's just being right there and saying, well, I'm here on earth. Might as well do something good. We all should, shouldn't we? Or maybe yours is like Rachel Kurtz and Agape Dave Shear, and yours involves like actually rapping or singing. I don't know what your passion or joy is, but I know that I want us to be the kind of community that invites and challenges all of us to figure that out. I want all of us to know what we're passionate about, what our values are, and then to have our resources and our lives line up with it. To actually live out. See, I think that's what was happening at Pastor McCray's church. There were folks who were coming in like, you don't expect 90%? This has changed my life and all you want is 10%? That's amazing. There were folks who were coming to Paul saying, we are in this with you. The good news means so much to us. And so Paul was writing a shared letter of hope to them. I think that's what Evelyn was sharing with us, this shared letter of hope for how God was moving in her life and inviting her to do something crazy at 98, like get her car out and drive somebody to be in community. So this morning, I want to ask you to do something kind of similar to what that person asked us 5 years ago. And it's going to be hard for some of you. And you don't ever have to send this off, but I want to ask you to write a letter. And so I hope in your bulletins, if they're in there, there's like a sheet of paper. And if there aren't, there are some in the back as we move to communion. I hope you'll pick one of these up. You don't have to finish this letter this morning. I'd actually encourage you not to, but I hope you'll start it. This is something that we did down at Lake Institute. And I think this is an excellent way to start us on a road of moving toward becoming the kind of people whose passions align with the way we live out our lives. The generosity that we want to have actually gets taken place in our own lives. So we want you to think of someone you love. It could be a spouse, a partner, it could be a child or a grandparent. And I want you to imagine writing a letter to this person. And you'll see right there some of the things we invite you to do. We want you to tell them your story. We want you to talk about your blessings and your wounds. Describe what's precious to you and what you never want to lose. Describe some of your passions and your hopes. Reveal what you would change in the world if you had all the money and the authority to do whatever you wanted. Discuss the legacy you'd like to leave your family and community. And be candid about how you want to be remembered. Outline the way in which you hope to use your possessions, the things you've been blessed with over these next 5 or 10 years. How are you going to connect your deep convictions about your life with your generous potential to do something really significant for humanity? Again, you may not ever actually send this letter, but I hope that you'll spend some time writing it. I think it's the process of crafting this letter that might allow us to see the generous love of God and what that looks like in our lives, and then to try to have our own lives line up with that just a little bit more today than they did yesterday, and a little bit more tomorrow than they do today. See, our hope is that we will be a church that encourages one another to write those letters that are passionate about how we are and whose we are. See, Paul was writing that to the church in Philippi. He believed something so deeply that he wanted to just thank them for being in it with him and remind them of what that really was. Evelyn looked around and she saw folks who had needs in her space. And she wrote a letter to us through this video of what she's passionate about, where her deep joy meets the world's deep hunger. And so we want to invite you to do that same thing. We come from a tradition of people who write out our hopes and our thanksgivings, and may that make us now and always a generous people of God. To make a difference, I want my life to make a change.
To make a change. I want my life to do some good here.